Shambhala is an interesting animal. It's a blend of both traditional Tibetan Buddhism and something called Shambhala, which arises from the example of an ancient warrior culture, where there was a value for human ingenuity and good-heartedness and a sense that you could build a wholesome civilization based on a recognition of our inherent strength and goodness. So the Boulder Shambhala Center is just sort of naturally interested then in how do we bring that kind of view to the concerns of our current era. And certainly climate change right now feels extremely important in terms of the health and welfare of humanity and all of the animal world and the whole situation. So I think we have a very natural interest in this, and my colleague Emily has been working for some years with the Climate Change and Society Salon at the Shambhala Center, and it was from this that our first climate change symposium last year arose.
Well, Emily, talk a little bit about, I suppose the subtitle of this climate symposium is Warrior Principle Climate Action. What is the warrior principle? How can it be applied to climate?
Well, it's very much along the lines of what Melanie was just talking about, that, of course, it's not warrior in the sense of waging war, but it's really arousing bravery and compassion and not necessarily having answers, but being willing to address and face what's happening and drawing from the inherent wisdom that human beings possess. And that's not just something that Shambhala is involved in, that the warrior tradition really belongs in many, many different traditions and maybe talked about in different ways, but we're trying to rouse that at this symposium, and then with the lens being how do we direct that toward, you know, meaningful action in the face of climate catastrophe, really.
Well, as we heard, there is some meaningful action happening, certainly at a city level, but I know that you also have a lot of citizen activists who are going to be engaged in this symposium as well. I mean, what can be done at an individual level if we are moving into let's battle this climate change?
Well, it really depends on sort of how deep you want to go. While this is not a meditation weekend, it is going to be drawing on some of the supports and wisdom tradition that comes through meditation. But we're really trying to build this symposium to address it on kind of multiple levels. And for example, Brett is going to be participating in one of the breakout sessions, along with my husband, actually, David Takahashi. And so David is going to be bringing to the conversation, for example, what a citizen can do in their own household in terms of changing the energy use of their what's happening within their own home and their own transportation. So some real practical skills as well.
Well, Breck, Karen, I mean, how can individuals impact something that seems so absolutely massive now? When, as I said, we're living through it, whether it's the wildfires or the hurricanes or various different things, can individual actions cumulatively really make a difference?
Yes, I think it's actually helpful to step back just a few years even to when I started working with the city in 2013 and I was hired to help write the next generation of our climate action plan. In our city, like hundreds of other cities that had actually signed on to the Kyoto Protocol and made commitments to reducing emissions, and those commitments had a certain date, 2012, and so everybody was rewriting their plans. When I first started with the city, I would suggest that we were still living in and working from the perspective that we were hoping to stop climate change, and that was the kind of pervasive social view. And I would argue now, here 5 years later, that what we now realize is that climate change is happening. It's going to continue to happen. The question is really how long, how intense, and how we're going to actually turn the corner on this. And I think the other thing that's really starting to emerge is a shift in the way we think about what climate change represents. And I would suggest that it's not so much about an opponent or something that we have to do battle with, as much as it is about a message from a larger living system, in this case, the global Earth system, that the way humans are living is no longer compatible with that system staying in certain conditions that we like. And so rather than climate change being a problem, I think what we're starting to see is that climate change is a message. It's a signal from that larger living system that if we don't change, it's going to change. And so one of the things I think is so exciting about the work that Melanie and Emily and so many others in our community are doing is that we're bringing this conversation into a larger sphere to say, let's talk about what's really happening and then what our options around that are. And so there are, as Emily noted, there are options and really important and critical actions at all levels. So I would say that one of the first messages that we're getting, or one of the first forms of wisdom that this change is telling us, is that we have to change our energy system, and that those changes have to be made from a personal level through to community, national, and international levels. At a personal level, this means essentially getting off fossil fuels. And so what the city has been doing as a part of our contribution to this is figuring out a pathway, something we're actually calling a roadmap to 100% renewable living. And so we call this, we're actually launching in part softly as a part of this conference, this new set of tools that we can offer households that they can actually take. And there's basically four big moves. How do we make our homes energy efficient? How do we get our energy from renewable sources? How do we electrify everything in our house and get off natural gas and other forms of petroleum? And how do we electrify our transportation? So what's beautiful about Emily's family and David and the work that they've done is they're actually living examples of how that's done. And not because it's just a morally good thing to do, but actually it brings lots of benefits to their family.
How can, say, a city, particularly the city of Boulder, that has these very ambitious goals around climate change and getting off fossil fuels, how can they ensure that this is a future that's accessible to everyone, that we're not going to see even more of a wealth divide, mm-hmm. when a lot of these cleaner energies, and whether it's improving insulation in your house or getting a more fuel-efficient car or even an electric car, they're expensive. And we are seeing a situation right now where there's only people who have access to that mm-hmm. can afford that. Are we moving into a future where we're going to have even more inequality when it comes to energy and energy choices?
Yeah, that's such an important question. And I think one of the really exciting developments that occurred as the city was working with the community to develop and refine our community climate action plan, which the city council passed last December. And I should just say that in December, after 2 years of community engagement, city council unanimously approved a new climate goal, which is to reduce our emissions by 80% by 2050. But perhaps even more exciting and more immediate is that we made a commitment to 100% renewable electricity by 2030 and to double the amount of solar that we have in our community by 2020. We already have almost the highest per capita solar adoption in the United States, and we want to double that just to show that we can do that. But as you say, the question is, how do we do that? And so as a part of this community engagement around that plan, an exciting new organization formed at the university called the Just Transition Collaborative. And their mission is actually to help support the city and the community to think about and to develop the mechanisms for how we make this transition in a way that does benefit all. So just think, for example, what does it take for all households to start making this transition? Well, we have to actually all replace our water heaters and furnaces. That's a lot of work. The question is, who gets that work and who's trained for that work and how do we train for that work? So that's one of the elements that we're working on, is how do we make this transition in the HVAC industry? How do we make this transition with solar? How do we help get people into electric vehicle maintenance and development? So those are the kinds of ways that we see bringing people into that opportunity.
Melanie Klein, another forum that's going to be happening as part of the upcoming Shambhala Symposium on Climate Action is an interfaith panel. And we are seeing faith groups coming forward to talk about climate change and responsibility in a way that we haven't seen before, particularly, say, Christian, which is, you know, separate from what you guys have got going on, but like the Christian evangelical tradition has not always been the stewardship of the land. It's been more the dominion of the land, in terms of we don't have to worry about the consequences because we have dominion over the land. We are seeing that change somewhat. I mean, what role do faith organizations have to play in this conversation?
Well, we think there's a potential for quite a big role. In fact, one of the reasons why Brett is working with us is because of the city's interest in interfaith activity with regard to environmental action. And we've been working with a wonderful organization called Green Faith for some time, which brings together Christian ministry and environmental work. And actually beyond that, it's truly an interfaith organization. And the executive director from Green Faith will be moderating our interfaith panel. And the interfaith panel on Sunday morning will include Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, and Jewish faith leaders. And they will be talking exactly about this, about what is this what is this special sort of resilience that comes out of people working together, people from different traditions working together on something like this, and how that kind of strength and diversity can be very powerful, that we can look beyond maybe our typical points of view and share the burden with each other of making important changes. There's, in fact, the Episcopals in Boulder have gone net zero with their church, St. John's. So we think that's a marvelous example, and that we could emulate that.